This podcast is a production of Transworld Radio United Kingdom. For further information, please visit our website www.twr.org.uk.
Hello and welcome to The Exchange. I'm your presenter, James Maitland-Fullard. Thank you for joining us. I hope that you've had a nice Christmas and you're continuing to enjoy the Christmas season. On today's episode of the programme, we're going to play you a new interview with the Christian author, Steve Maltz. Before we start today's programme, we're going to play you a song. It's called A Strange Way to Save the World, and it's by Mark Harris.
I'm sure he must have been surprised where this road had taken him. 'Cause never in a million lives would he have dreamed of Bethlehem. And standing at the manger, he saw with his own eyes the message from the angel come to life. And Joseph said, why me? I'm just a simple man of trade. Why him with all the rulers in the world? Why here inside this stable filled with hay? Why her? She's just an ordinary girl. And now I'm not one to second guess what angels have to say. But this is such a strange way to save the world. Of how it could have been if Jesus had come as he deserved. There would have been no Bethlehem, no lowly shepherds at his birth. But Joseph knew the reason love had to reach so far. And as he held the Savior in his arms, he must have thought, why me? I'm just a simple man of trade. Why him with all the rulers in the world? Why inside this stable filled with hay? Why her? She's just an ordinary girl. And now I'm not one to second guess what angels have to say. But this is such a strange way to save the world. Second guess what angels have to say. But this is such a strange way. What a strange way.
strange way to say the world. Oh, 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 oh.
Good evening and welcome to TWR Choice.
Our special guest today is Steve Maltz, the author of several books, including his trilogy, How the Church Lost the Way, How the Church Lost the Truth, and To Life. And he joins us now. So, Steve, how has the church lost the way and the truth?
Oh, my goodness. You've come in all guns blazing there.
Oh, well, I always try my best.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Controversial titles, provocative titles. Part of the job of getting noticed is in your titles of your books. And I thought, well, it's not that it's an irrelevant title. They're very relevant titles. They haven't always gone down very well, but they are a perfect description of what the books are about. So the first book, How the Church Lost the Way, is simply looking at the church as it was at the beginning at the Book of Acts when it was called The Way. So basically, what that book is saying is, well, why isn't the church now in the 21st century the same as the church was 2,000 years ago when it was called The Way? So that sort of established the theme of the books. And the second one, How the Church Lost the Truth, is taking it to the next level and being a little bit more provocative and sort of saying, well, some of the truths that Jesus and the first apostles sort of felt were God's truth, some of those have somehow sort of got lost in the mix, somehow been watered down or changed over the centuries, and the book explains why and explains exactly what they did believe and why these days we tend not to always believe the same things that they believed. So there you go, The Way and the Truth.
Well, such a good answer. I don't really know where to go next, because the topics that you discuss in the book, I mean, they're huge. Yeah. Huge topics. I love the cover of the second book, right, How the Church Lost the Way, because it shows a pulpit overgrown, and I walk around a lot now and I see a lot of closed churches. Now, do you think some of the topics that you've come across in these books, do you think that might be some of the reason why we have so many churches now that have just not only are closed but are also inactive?
Absolutely. I think when the truth isn't central to our faith, then I think sort of God just sort of wipes the dust off his hands and walks away in a sense. Where there's no power, where there's no truth, what is there to sort of attract someone to a church? When a church is simply a reflection of society, then why would people want to go to church? And they tend to be the churches that are closing down and becoming furniture warehouses and places like that. Churches that are growing, and there are churches that are growing, tend to be those where, you know, God is seen to be operating. Not always totally. Sometimes it's perceived that he's operating, because some of it can be drummed up by human excitement and things like that. But you can see the difference between, you know, a thriving, exciting church and one that is dead and buried. And we need to get back to not just to have a church where everything is exciting, but we need to have a church where the truth is central to everything that goes on inside those buildings.
Well, Steve, I understand this next question is also a big question, but again, it's big topic. So let's talk about practically the church now in 2011, just coming up to Christmas. What have we got wrong?
Well, we've got Christmas wrong.
Scrooge
here is the God. Bah humbug.
You've got to tell us about why you think we've got it wrong.
Well, basically, just looking at the calendar, Christmas, in a sense of the 25th of December, started off as a pagan festival of debauchery and revelry, in that it was originally a Roman festival before it was a Christian one. And that's what they did. They had parties, they did role play, and they did all sorts of dodgy stuff. Okay, all I would say is that things have gone full circle, and that's what we've got now at Christmas. I'm not saying that's in the Christian world, but Christmas is now seen as a time for parties, for the time of revelry, debauchery, etc.
I mean, is that the church's fault?
No, it's not the church's fault. Well, it is in a way. Perhaps Christmas should have been seen as a bit more special. In fact, there is a lot of evidence that, you know, as I said, that was a convenient date. that the early church made for the birth of Christ. Those who have done a bit more research have realized that that Jesus was more likely born in September, October time. You can prove that in a very roundabout way, actually just looking at the Bible, and there's no time to go through that. Just do a Google search, you know, see what I mean. But what is interesting about that study, if you believe that that Jesus was born September, October time, which would have been the Jewish Feast of Tabernacles, if you do all your sums and you figure out, work back 9 months to his actual conception, and then what you do is you get back to the December, perhaps close to Christmas, but instead of Christmas, you get the Jewish festival of Hanukkah, which is the festival of lights. And for me, to think that Jesus' life started at conception and the light came into the world, it fitted in. It fits in so well with that concept of the festival of lights. That I think is, you know, if you want the truth, I think that would be a more realistic way of looking at Christmas. Not that I'm saying that everyone should stop their carols and their Christmas, their present giving and all that stuff, but just to be a bit more biblical.
It's an interesting point, and I mean, yeah. I think you'd understand this as well as I do. We're not going to change the date of Christmas. I think the 25th of December is set in stone, but what can we do to be more biblical in our celebration of Christmas?
Well, we can put Jesus central to it. Very, very difficult. You know, we can have the best will in the world as a Christian to try to put Jesus central, but, you know, especially if you're a family with kids and, you know, the media has bombarded us and you can't keep kids away from the TV and things like that. And of course, they're expecting the presents and they're expecting all the trappings of Christmas, and we're expecting to eat too much and we're expected to overindulge on everything. And that is just society encroaching into the church. And that is what's happened. And that's in a way sort of twisted it back to the theme of the books. That is what the books are about. It's showing how society has encroached on the church, on the pure biblical faith over the last 2,000 years. And now we've ended up with a faith that's very much watered down. I'm not saying that you and I are not Christians. You know, the salvation is not an issue, but I'm talking about, you know, the peripheral things that sort of surround our faith. That's where the problems are.
Many of our listeners will probably be listening to this now thinking, I celebrate Christmas. I go to church. I love God. I love Jesus Christ as my saviour. But I still get stuffed on a Christmas dinner on Christmas Day. Mm. And I mean, is there anything wrong with that?
No, I do it as well. Look, do as I say, not what I do. I'm thinking of an ideal world here. I mean, there's a lot of things that I say I preach in my books. And, you know, any author that's going to be honest and any broadcaster that's going to be honest, they don't always practice what they preach. And, you know, if everyone did what I say in the books, then we'll all be, you know, living a fantastic Christian life. But I include myself in that. So, you know, I'm not telling anyone to stop, you know, to stop eating and enjoying themselves, because I think if we see it as a time for families getting together, then that's a positive thing. You know, families have taken a real hit over the years. And, you know, if it's a time when you're going to meet your relatives that you haven't seen for ages and for everyone to be together in the same room playing games, then I'm not saying that's a bad thing. You know, let's be honest, you know, my third book, the one you haven't mentioned yet, To Life, is simply about celebrating life, and being a killjoy is not the way to do that.
Well, Steve, in talking about the whole idea around Christmas, we have hit on an important point, and that is really, I mean, how involved in the world should Christians be? Because it's a delicate balance, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just thinking, James, about being in the world but not of the world, and also in James it sort of says that, you know, that God hates a church that gets too involved in the world, gets too sucked into the world. And this is a real difficulty, because the world, you know, I suppose with the internet and the media, everything is closer together now, and churches use the same media and the same internet as everyone else, and it's not surprising that you get a very blurred lines between the church and between the world. And that blurred line seems to be closer to the world than it is to the church, meaning that perhaps the church has gone too far into the world and is in great danger of being totally sucked in. And sometimes we need to sort of stand away from it and just think to ourselves, why do we do this? What, and this is it, why why am I doing this? Am I doing this because it seems the right thing, I'm told to do it, or my parents do it, or my church does it? You know, the plumb line of everything you do should be the Bible, and particularly the way that, that Jesus sort of acted and did his stuff 2,000 years ago. The plumb line is still the same, hasn't changed, but we tend to lose that.
Steve, one of the things that I love about your books is the way that you can communicate what society was like when Jesus walked on this earth. Let's go back now to the birth of Jesus. What would it have been like for Mary, who was unmarried and carrying a child? What would it have been like for her at the time?
She would have been quite young, you know, barely into her teens, I'd imagine, 14, 15. You know, it would have been as it probably would have been 100 years ago in Puritan England, in sort of Victorian England, that the stigma attached to, you know, having a child without a father can only mean that you've conceived outside wedlock, and she should have been stoned, to be quite honest. You know, that would have been one way they would have dealt with it. Joseph came in and supported her, and even though I think at the beginning, he didn't know what was going on either, as soon as he knew the truth, he protected her, he married her. If he hadn't done that, she would have been in dead trouble. But then, of course, you know, God's in charge of everything, so it all worked out well for her. But yeah, those were hard times.
These events have really shaped the course of history. And I mean, now back in 2011, yeah, the church has got it wrong in various different ways. But let's look at some positives. There are places in our society where the church has got it right, isn't there?
Absolutely. I'm not being a total sort of a downer on everything. The idea of the book is where the church has brought in ideas from outside the Bible, particularly pagan Greek philosophy. The more those ideas have come into the church, then the more problems there have been. And I'm talking about the old philosophies of Plato and Aristotle, and, you know, big subjects, and, you know, probably far too big to discuss in this short interview. But there have been churches throughout history and even today that have somehow functioned without that sort of pollution. And I'm talking about churches during the Middle Ages that were seen as heretical churches, some of them, such as the Waldensians, for instance, that were persecuted by the Catholics for being heretics. The Waldensians, all they were doing was reading the Bible and acting accordingly. And they weren't acting according to all the Greek nonsense that got into the church. And equally, closer to home, say, was it 17th, 18th century, with John Wesley and the Methodists, that was a fantastic movement that sort of breathed fresh air into the Church of England. And again, the things that they did there were simply going right back to how things were at the beginning of the Bible in terms of not just belief, but holiness as well. So you didn't just believe the things of the Bible, you actually acted on them, which is something the church hasn't always done. And then bringing right up to sort of today, these days, there are churches and there are people all over the place, probably particularly in the third world, who have got it a little bit more righter than we have, in the sense that because those in the third world have so little, they have to rely more on God, and therefore their Christianity is a lot more real and a lot more focused on Jesus rather than on the material nonsense that has crept into a lot of our churches.
Let's bring the interview to a close with a reflective question. When we look at everything that we've talked about in the interview and the things that you've talked about in your books, I mean, our listeners sitting at home who might be thinking, yeah, Steve's got a point. What can they do to try and live a life better serving to God without getting involved in all the trappings of society?
Well, they can read my books. No, read the Bible first. That was the question that I posed myself with my third book, because the first two, the titles you mentioned at the beginning of this interview, were real downers, weren't they? How the Church Lost the Way, How the Church Lost the Truth. The third book, a brighter book and a brighter title, it simply says To Life. And the point being is, how can Christians go back to how it should be? How can we act as if 2,000 years of Greek thinking never happened? How can we think Hebraically, as I would say, or biblically? And it can be done. And there are churches that are doing it. We met one up in Scotland that have been totally created from scratch according to early biblical ideas. And it's a fantastic church. And so it can happen. We have to try to live with this one question in mind, and that is, it's quite simple actually, is what would God think? Put God at the centre of your life and act according to that knowledge. That's all it is. It's, we've become too man-centred. You know, say to yourself, okay, God, you should be at the centre of my life. Tell me anything in my life where you are not, you know, where I'm not at the centre, and then do something about it. And that's what we need to do. A fresh look at where we should be in terms of our relationship with God. That's what it's all about. And that is probably the best way to start.
Steve Maltz, it's been a pleasure to have you joining us on The Exchange again. For our listeners now who might be thinking, wow, I really want to find out more about this, can you just point our listeners towards your website?
Yep, just go to www.stevemaltz.com. That's StevemaltZ.com. And that will take you to my book site.
Steve Maltz, it's been a pleasure to have you on the programme today. Keep in touch.
Yeah, will do. Thank you for the interview.
Good evening, and welcome to TWR Choice.
You're listening to The Exchange, and our special guest today has been Steve Maltz. Tomorrow on The Exchange, we're going to be joined by a huge special guest. His name is Alfie Bowe, and he's a multi-award-winning opera singer. You may well have seen him on TV recently on Songs of Praise, or at the Remembrance Day service at the Royal Albert Hall. You may have also seen him recently in Les Miserables in the West End. He's been playing one of the main characters there. He'll be joining us tomorrow on The Exchange to share a little bit about his story with us. So make sure you join us at 8:30 tomorrow evening on The Exchange. We're going to play you out of today's programme with a song by Jonathan Vera. This is Thorns in the Straw.
Since the day the angel came, it seemed that everything had changed. The only certain thing was the child that moved within. On the road that would not end, winding down to Bethlehem. So far away from home. Just a blanket on the floor of a vacant cattle store. But there the child was born. She held him in her arms, and as she laid him down to sleep, she wondered, will it always be so bitter yet so sweet? And did she see her in the straw by his head a thorn? And did she smell her in the air on that starry night? Then the words of ancient seers tumbled down the centuries. A virgin shall conceive, God with us, Prince of Peace. Man of sorrows, strangest name, O Joseph, there it comes again. So bitter yet so sweet. And did she see there in the straw by his head a thorn? And did she smell there in the air on that starry night? She watched him through the years. her joy was mingled with her tears, and she'd feel it all again.